This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
This is
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture on the air and online.
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Bienvenidos.
Atenea Americana.
Welcome. Bienvenidos.
From Stanford to the world.
Hispanic Americans are hereditary less likely than non-Hispanic whites to develop and die from various cancers. Unfortunately, that is not always the case. Studies have shown that certain types of cancer tend to strike more often Hispanic American populations. Among those results, it is noticed that Hispanic men and women are twice as likely to have and to die from liver cancer. Hispanic women are 1.5 more likely to die from cervical cancer as compared to non-Hispanic white women. It is suspected that this statistic reflects a socioeconomic problem more than a genetic predisposition. Hispanic American in poorest communities tend not to get screened for common cancers as regularly as non-Hispanic whites. The good news is that many of these cancer types can be prevented or treated with regular screening and early detection. Today, we are talking with Claudia Luján, a Mexican student of medicine from the University of Philadelphia, who spent the summer at Stanford University helping a public outreach program, which is targeted to Hispanic in the Bay Area. They are bringing multilingual material to inform the community about the more important screenings for cancer, about how to prevent, and how to get treatment for cancer. They are also promoting various days when doctors will be giving free cancer screening for patients with multilingual help in the area. Oral cancer is one of those preventable diseases. This type of cancer affects over 40,000 new people each year and kills one life every hour in the United States. Many cases are preventable and can be linked to tobacco use, alcohol, HPV, and a lack of oral hygiene. Early detection of oral cavity lesions through a quick, painless, and non-invasive screening is the most effective way to counter this harsh reality. To help fight this disease, increase awareness, and promote the importance of oral exams, the Stanford Hospital and Clinics will offer free oral cancer screening on October 2014. Educational material regarding risk factors, tobacco cessation, and low-cost dental care will also be available. Stay with us to learn more about this. And today we're here at
Atenea Americana, we have a student guest. She is Claudia Luján, originally from Mexico, but she is here from the Swarthmore College in Philadelphia because he has been helping a program here at Stanford University, which is called Raise Cancer. So tell me a little bit, what is the program about?
So I'm here basically helping one of my friends and colleagues that I knew from Swarthmore. He's currently a clinical research assistant in the Department of Oncology, and he was able to identify an issue within cancer, which is the huge gaping health disparities that we see. And so he started this group, which is currently a student group, but is also in the last two final stages of being filed as a non-for-profit. And so what we do as a group, Erase Cancer, is basically looking at the racialized dimensions of cancer care, looking at the problems with race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic status, and how that sort of affects cancer diagnosis, prognosis, and all the various aspects that comes into cancer. So our main goals are partially educational, because we do believe that's a really big component in making sure people are aware that, you know, cancer doesn't affect everyone unbiasedly. There's actually a huge bias, right? So you can see.
But for hereditary reasons, for exposure to something in particular?
Right. So when we're looking at social determinants of health, that's basically what that means, is that people, you know, the education that you get is largely going to determine the kind of job you have, the environmental toxins you're exposed to, the kind of neighborhood that you're going to live in, and all those sort of factors and components are going to factor into you getting cancer, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're someone of low socioeconomic status, that might be indicative of not having education, and that's going to factor into, like, what you're going to eat, your ability to exercise, what kind of job that you have, et cetera, et cetera. And so at the end of the day, you're going to see rates of cancer that are a lot higher in African-American communities and Latino communities. And, of course, there are genetics that fall into it. So when we're looking, for example, at liver cancer, we know that certain Asian-American populations are 2 to 11 times more likely to develop liver cancer. So there's definitely a strong genetic component to it.
In Asian Americans, you say?
Yes, in certain Asian American community. So there's definitely genetic links, but what we're trying to see is, you know, a lot of times it's not genetic, it's actually sort of the social environment that you're living in. And, you know, we have to do our best to try to educate people as much as possible to make sure, you know, if you're certain of ethnicity, you might be of higher rates. And we do see that if you look at statistics across cancer, breast, prostate, lung, colorectal, you see that a lot of times for the majority, African Americans and Latinos are much more likely to develop cancer and die from it when compared to their white counterparts. So it's definitely an issue, and that's basically what we're trying to address. You know, what are the ways that we can fix this? That's not, you know, because we're not really targeting the sort of genetic, but, you know, via screening, via sort of early detection and going through a very in-depth sort of educational process, we can then hopefully try to close those gaps that we see.
So, but then there are basically economic, pretty much economics and racial, because all these problems are actually because these people is too poor and has been, they haven't had all the access to education and all the access to the screening sometimes.
Yeah, and so part of what Erase Cancer is trying to do is actually host these sort of free screening sites that are going to be available for the community. So there's one coming up in October. It's actually going to be here at Stanford for oral cancer. And, you know, our long-term plans is, like, being able to have different pickup sites where we can, you know, go into these communities that where we know we have high rates of cancer and being able to bring people into, you know, just to get screened to make sure, you know, that they're following the sort of recommendation that the Cancer Society recommends for people, you know, of certain age at different stages of life, et cetera. And so that's definitely something that we're pushing towards, and as well as making sure that the education we provide is comprehensive, right? So it's not just a matter of having a patient, sitting them down and telling them, you know, oh, you have some abnormal growth, you should probably get this checked out. It's also redirecting them to the proper care, you know, to the proper physician's office. It's also making sure that they have insurance. And if they don't, you know, we have a plan of saying, you know, here's where you can sign up, here are your options available. Because that's really what needs to happen when you're dealing with healthcare. You know, there's a lot of different levels to it, and you really have to make sure that you're targeting at all these different levels so you can get your result.
This episode of Atenea Americana is part of Stanford Hispanic Broadcasting, and we record most of our shows from a non-profit public radio station. As part of our commitment to good causes, we want to give you some very interesting public service announcements. Every 2 seconds, someone in the U.S. needs blood. The Stanford Blood Center supplies patients with more than 100,000 blood components per year. They rely on community donors like you to accomplish their mission of making sure blood is there when needed. All healthy, eligible individuals are invited to donate. For more information, call the Stanford Blood Center at 650-723-7831 or visit bloodcenter.stanford.edu. And remember that today we're talking with Claudia Luján about outreach programs for cancer screening for minorities.
Other than this next screening for oral cancer, are there other specialties that will be out there also in the next few months for screening, like, as you say, breast cancer, prostate cancer, and these other kind of curable, treatable cancers that are out there and are very common?
That's definitely in the works. Right now, what we've been doing is sort of reaching out the community, and we're signing up to show up to health fairs and have educational information there available for people and tell them about when we're going to have these free screenings available. And, you know, it's a little bit of coordination because we do need to have, you know, the licensed medical physicians to be there to do the screening. And we've been working to, you know, make these educational pamphlets very accessible to people, you know, something that they would want to read. Quick statistics about that are relevant to them, right? And so at Race Cancer, I think what makes us distinct is that we're sort of catering to Santa Clara County. We're looking at the statistics, you know, the information that basically the government gives out about what are the type of cancers that are being that people are being affected by. And interestingly enough, almost across the board, Santa Clara County has higher cancer rates than the national average. So that's definitely an issue. And when you look at specific things like breasts and prostate, that's also very, very high. So what we're trying to do is just sort of synthesize this information in a way that, you know, caters to the community so we can, you know, more effectively target, you know. We're not at the stage of where personalized medicine mm-hmm. is such a big thing right now. So, like, I think one of the important things in doing is looking at a community level. You know, if we can't do individual medicine as much, you know, I'm sure in a couple years with developments and genomics advancing, that it's definitely going to be a possibility. But as for now, you know, we're looking at community level to, you know, better target mm-hmm. The issues that we're seeing.
Is there any reason so far? Because I read a lot about levels of poisonings in the waters and in underground water around the Silicon Valley area because of the all high-tech companies that were here before. And, you know, they were making chips and all this other stuff that were getting into the ground, and somehow the ground is getting into the water and sometimes even spreading some gases somewhere. Is there any kind of reason or for this higher level in Santa Clara or any kind of way to mitigate what is happening?
Well, from the research that we've been doing, we haven't found a specific reason, but like all things, it's probably accumulation of a lot of different things put together. So what you just mentioned, environmental toxins, that's definitely a big thing. Anything toxin that could dysregulate normal cell function is, you know, not good for your body. It's mm-hmm. probably going to lead to some abnormal growth, yeah. Et cetera. And so, yeah, that's definitely one possibility. We also are thinking that culture barriers, language barriers, that's also a huge thing. Mm-hmm. I know from personal experience sometimes, you know, when you grow up in a certain culture, especially, well, I'm talking about, I guess, from, like, Mexican culture, certain things are taboo, right? Mm-hmm. So certain topics revolving sex education and things like that. People usually, you know, there are certain cultural norms where it's a little bit taboo, but, you know, it becomes huge when you're dealing things with, like, you know, the HPV vaccine and the preventions of those cancers. And so, it's a very, very complex thing, and you really have to look at it like a community by community basis, you know, because, you know, mm-hmm. A certain, for example, Mexican population in one area can have a certain issue, can be environmental because they might be living in, you know, next to some factory that's expelling toxics or fumes. Mm-hmm. And that can be completely different from what an Asian American community, migrant yes. community might be experiencing with huge language barriers. And we do know that mm-hmm. Santa Clara County has a huge diversity racially, ethnically, and I forgot the number, but a solid amount of languages are being spoken here, right? Yeah. So if you have your primary care doctors who only speak English, maybe Spanish, you know, that might become an issue, definitely. Yeah.
Yes. Also, not just for the Santa Clara County, but now that you have been working with statistics, there is a lot of Latino population that are migrant workers or farm workers. And I can imagine that a lot of these regular crops, they use a lot of fertilizing and a lot of things so the crops can survive tough times and all the sickness that crops can have. But that can also be toxic for people, or they are completely okay with that. There is no higher level on migrant population to develop cancers or other things.
No. I'm actually not quite sure if there's even information around migrant workers and their health care, just because in general, you know, they're invisible, right? No one really takes the time to really look after them, much less document, you know, how their health issues are. From my general understanding is that usually regulations here in the United States are a lot more stricter in terms of the fertilizers that they use in comparison to abroad. And I do know that abroad, there is a lot of issues with people having very severe health consequences from working in certain migrant fields, in certain agriculture, mm-hmm. right, with certain pesticides and fertilizers, etc. In the United States, I'm not quite sure, but yeah, it's definitely probably something that, you know, people are being very strongly affected by. You know, if we don't know what people are being exposed to, we don't know at what levels are being exposed to, right? So a lot of the times they'll say, you know, these fertilizers, pesticides, et cetera, are safe at a certain level, right? But if you're working consistently with these materials, mm-hmm. that's probably going to be an issue because your level of exposure is probably a lot higher than what you want it to be.
And from years when you are a little kid and you're helping your parents around, and because these are families that move around with their kids, and their kids will work since they are little in the fields during the weekends, and it's not just them.
Right, definitely. And I think when it comes to cancer care, you know, we see all these statistics, like 1 in 4 people are affected for women. Like 1 in 4 are going to be affected with breast cancer at least once in their lifetime. But what those statistics do is they sometimes erase the complexity of cancer. You know, these aren't 4 random women mm-hmm. who developed it. It's actually, you know, we have to ask, who are these women? Mm-hmm. Of what race and ethnic background are they? You know, and yeah, if you look at it, you know, if you're white, you are going to have a higher chance of surviving breast cancer than if you were Latina, African-American, American Indian, etc. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically a lot of the message we want to bring. You know, like, this isn't an unbiased killer. It's actually very biased, and we need to be aware of these certain complexities. And if we're actually going to try to target cancer in a way that's efficient, we need to be aware of these issues and go, you know, beyond the sort of quick statistics that are, you know, thrown around a lot of the times, just to keep a message.
A lot of these new policies, for me, are a little bit scary, because now I'm hearing that they want to lower the screening, for example, the mammograms. They don't say they are necessary. So it's like they're telling you, well, if you want to have your mammogram after 40, no, you can actually wait until 50s. And now they're saying that they are trying to pass the one about prostate cancer, that no, you don't need that much screening, it doesn't make the difference. So for me, it's scary, because it looks like we're trying to save money somewhere and we're trying to be lazy, and that will affect a lot of people. I don't know if it's actually unnecessary to have these screenings, but for me, they sound very important.
Well, I think when you're looking across different cancers, screening is going to be different, right? So when you're looking at, you know, certain screening procedures, the risks might outweigh the benefits. And so in that sort of situation, you really have to talk about your physician and see, you know, is it worth taking the screening, such as the case for liver cancer, right? So you have, you know, the procedures are usually a bit more invasive. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you are talking about, like, oral cancer screening, all you need is, you know, a licensed medical professional to look into your mouth and look into to see if there's anything abnormal. With the sort of the discrepancy surrounding cancer screening, I think a lot of times it is justified. And if you look at different sites, these are, you know, well-established medical organizations, and sometimes there is a difference between their screening recommendations. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just important to inform patients of, you know, we don't want to push screening too much, because, again, there might be some risks associated with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you have a patient who comes in and they, you know, have a 20-year history of smoking, they use alcohol frequently, and they're over the age of 65, most likely they're, like, great candidates for having lung cancer, in which case, you know, that screening recommendation to get sort of a lung x-ray would definitely be important.
This is Atenea Americana, and I am your host, Isabel Jubes. You may find this and all my shows at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. This is a bilingual cultural show, bringing you a window to the Latin and Hispanic universe. Every week, for 2 hours, one in English and one in Spanish, from Stanford to the world. You can also be part of this, leaving me your comments, sharing your thoughts, and even more at StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org. I invite you to be part of this. And remember that today we're talking with Claudia Luján,
about outreach programs for cancer screening for minorities.
Are you also, other than giving this pamphlet for education for the people, where do you see this movement in 5 or 10 years?
Hopefully what we're sort of envisioning ourselves is, you know, being strongly established, being able to use the resources here available to sort of and redirect those resources in a way that we can effectively lower cancer rates. And so I think a lot of that we're going to be able to do if we're able to increase screening for people who are at risk of certain cancers. And I think it really means going into the communities, developing a trust with them, and, you know, making sure, to get people excited about this in a way, you know, this is positive for my health. You know, if we can provide this for free at, like, minimal amount of sort of a hassle to people, you know, if we can provide these services, you know, and hopefully see some type of change, you know, because right now, you know, higher than national average doesn't seem too good to begin with. And so lowering that, making sure, you know, people are getting the information out and at least know, you know, when I hit 40, I should probably get the screening done. And just going through those routines and having people internalize that and just try to do the best we can. Like I said, it's a very, very complex sort of problem, you know, when you're talking about just social issues in general, you know, poverty and racism, et cetera, because those are all interwoven into health. And we just need to remind people that, you know, those are factors that do play into it and they will continue to physically manifest themselves in that way.
And what about these vaccines like the HPV?
It's HPV.
What about these controversial vaccines for some cultures like the HPV for teenagers, girls and boys, that can actually prevent cancer? For these communities, if they are not really informed, some people think like, oh, you are asking our kids to have sex or something like that when you're giving them a vaccine. That will be also an issue that you guys are going to approach sometime?
Yes, definitely. And I think, that has definitely been a cultural issue. And I don't think that issue is specific to minority populations. In the United States, we've seen a lot of articles and a lot of controversy surrounding that. And I think it's important to remind people that, you know, your child, you know, usually the HPV is recommended, I believe, to be administered at 12 years of age for girls. I think it might be a little bit later for boys, but I just completely don't agree with that. You know, I think, you know, your health of your child goes first, and I think being worried about what could or might happen is not relevant whenever you're standing face-to-face with a cancer diagnosis, you know, and that's personally how I just feel about it. I just think it's very, very critical for, you know, parents to be informed that, you know, you need to get this vaccine before you have sex, because once you do, there might be the possibility that you might get the HPV, in which case it's too late, and you might develop cancer later on in life. And so I don't think there's no evidence suggesting that if you get a vaccine a 12-year-old girl is going to be more inclined to have sex. Like, that's not,
of course,
remotely relevant. But, you know, just hopefully, you know, trying to help parents understand, you know, these are the risks and these are the huge benefits. You know, you want to protect your child, you know, and it's like becomes a public issue too, right? It's not just your child that you're protecting, but, you know, if they're protected, they probably won't be giving it to anyone else, right?
Yeah, it's a social issue.
Definitely.
Well, thank you very much for coming and telling us about this program, and we'll be following you. We will be helping you in broadcast what is happening and how you can help the community.
No, thank you, of course. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And this was Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
a window to the Latin universe. This is
Radio Atenea Americana,
bilingual house of culture, on the air and online.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Vuelve pronto.
Atenea Americana.
From Stanford to the world.
Remember to come back soon.
Ciao.
See you later.